Getting Rich. At the beginning of our earthly experience, as soon as we are old enough to enter into conscious life, we begin to seek after material things. A child discovers that he gets satisfaction from food, pets, clothing, and toys. As he grows older, he still seeks after material things, but the nature of his wants and demands gradually changes. However, in time he discovers that he does not get as much satisfaction out of these material goods as he formerly did, even if he is able to gain most of the things which he desires, which is seldom the case. Nevertheless, there are unnumbered thousands of people upon whom it never seems to dawn that there is any other order of riches to be sought for. And so, notwithstanding the failure of material possessions and pursuits to give desired satisfaction and happiness, great numbers of people continue, from the cradle to the grave, a mad race to gain them, and never consciously enter into higher realms of life, which are always at hand for them, if they only knew how to enter in. A careful analysis will be instructive. All that the houses, public buildings, banks, and stores filled with merchandise in any city can even seem to confer upon the people of that city are comfort and satisfaction. But comfort and satisfaction are states of consciousness and not phenomena of matter. Were it not for the presence of consciousness, all the material things in a city would have no more significance than a dust heap. For consciousness alone can appreciate or set a value upon them. A peck of diamonds is worth nothing to a horse, and a peck of corn is worth nothing to a stone. Accordingly, it is easy to see that material riches have no value, except insofar as they can be made the means of increasing the riches of consciousness. Hence, it is apparent that fundamental riches are desirable states of consciousness, and that material goods are riches only in a secondary sense. To realize this and govern our activities accordingly is great gain. Set your affections on the things which are above, not on things on the earth. If the average man had $1,000 in his possession and knew that there was a decided liability that burglars would try to break into his house at night, he would take great precautions to guard that treasure. He would either place the money in the bank, or else he would equip his doors and windows with burglar alarms, and possibly arm himself, prepared to fight, if necessary, to guard his treasure. This he would do because he consciously set a distinct value upon the money. But how many people are there who will guard their mental treasure house, their consciousness, with equal care? How many people consciously place such a value upon peace and joy and love that they will guard against being despoiled of them even more carefully than they would guard against being despoiled of material treasures? If they had become awake to the fact that these desirable states of consciousness constitute fundamental riches, then they would value them even more than they value material goods, and would guard them with corresponding care. But most people hold peace, joy, and love at so small a valuation that they will allow even a trifling circumstance to invade their consciousness and steal away these treasures, leaving in place of them anger, envy, jealousy, anxiety, grief, and other afflictive mental states. Some gossip comes along with a tale that a friend has said some unkind or unjust thing. Promptly, without even waiting to learn whether the tale is true, the listener allows peace, love, and joy to be taken out of his consciousness. The loss of property, the sickness of a friend or relative, an insulting word, a pain in the body, and a dozen other outward occurrences are allowed to affect the same result. These things are often permitted to enter our mental treasure house and steal away our jewels without protest or objection. This is never the case, however, if we have learned that desirable states of consciousness are the true riches, and that they are more worth keeping a secure hold upon than any amount of material goods. Then we will be at great pains not to allow outward occurrences to interfere with our true inner wealth, for we know that it constitutes the kingdom of heaven and makes us truly rich toward God. If a man had a large income, but was in the habit of depositing his money in a safe to which thieves had ready access, and to which they were in the habit of paying frequent visits, so that when the man went to the safe to get his money, he could never be certain that there was any there, no matter how much he had deposited. Such a man would scarcely be regarded wealthy, nor could his credit among businessmen be very good. In order to be counted wealthy and reliable in this world's estimation, a man must have not only the ability to gain riches, but to safely care for them and maintain a firm and constant control of them. Likewise, a man is not rich in the treasures of the kingdom of heaven unless he has demonstrated the ability to maintain a firm and constant hold upon his spiritual riches, no matter what thieves and robbers in the line of outward temptations may strive to take them away. Mere good impulses and good intentions now and then, no matter how frequent or varied, do not make a man rich toward God. It is the retention and utilization of spiritual treasures, despite dangers, difficulties, and temptations, that demonstrates how much treasure one has really laid up in heaven. If a person is once thoroughly awakened to the fundamental importance of spiritual riches, so that he has had the experience, for a time, of keeping them safe and available in his consciousness, he soon learns that, for his own happiness, he cannot afford to let peace, joy, and love escape him, whatever the temptation to distraction of thought. Nevertheless, at this stage of his development, he has only just begun to enter into life. He has only learned to appreciate peace, joy, and love in a negative way. He has only discovered that he cannot get on very well without them. He does not take much conscious notice of them when he has them, but only begins to think about them when he perceives that there is danger that he may lose them. There is yet more for him to learn, which is of vast importance. There comes a time in the aspiring man's development when he begins to set a positive value upon desirable states of consciousness, when he begins to cultivate love in his consciousness, to watch it increase, and to experience joy in the accumulation, even more than the successful worldling enjoys the enlargement of his material possessions. He begins to discover new methods of increasing and using his store of love. He finds, for instance, that in doing a kindly and considerate deed for another, his own possession of peace, joy, love, and other mental riches is increased. And with his awakened sense, he becomes considerate for this increase far more than for a return in kind at the hands of the one to whom he had done a kindness, far more than for any material good he might receive. He has reached a point in his development where, in doing good deeds, he can realize that his reward is with him, because the very doing of the good deed automatically brings him an increase of the wealth which he has learned to value more than all other goods. He has come to understand and appreciate Jesus' words when he said, "Do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be called the children of the highest." If one who had no musical education were to attend a series of symphony concerts, they might not mean much to him at the start. They would bring him little satisfaction, even if they did not prove tiresome. But as he continued to attend, he would gradually begin to appreciate the music, until after a time, he would find himself experiencing a positive and lively sense of pleasure and benefit. This change in his experience would not be because there had been any essential change in the character of the concerts, but it would come solely as a result of growth in his power of appreciation, of being able to set a value in terms of consciousness upon the music. Likewise, a person may reach a stage of development where much of peace and love and righteousness are within the range of his experience and still get little positive joy from them. But if he begins to turn his attention to them and to the experiences which increase his store of them, then he begins more and more to appreciate them. And as this comes to pass, his store of mental riches is ever increasing. Then, instead of being merely negatively peaceful and happy, it comes to pass that he finds in the course of his experience continual occasions for positive exhilaration and joy. And although he knows that joy is the birthright of the children of God, he no longer takes these experiences of consciousness as matters of course, but lives in wonderland and constantly marvels at the goodness of God, who has conferred upon him the ability to possess, appreciate, and enjoy such riches. This thought, that we should become distinctly conscious of our mental states, and that we should watch the growth of our mental treasures, runs contrary to much that has been written. There are many who hold that as soon as a person begins to take account of his mental conditions, as soon as he begins to reckon his growth in love and in other spiritual virtues, he becomes self-conscious in an undesirable sense. But to consciously grow in the exercise and possession of divine love is not to become self-conscious, but God-conscious. Since to dwell in love and appreciate love, the reflection of God, is to consciously dwell in God and appreciate Him, which is the prime duty of man. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, in harmonious consciousness, where moth and rust do not corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. It is true that a person might analyze his mental states and take account of his growth in certain virtues in such a way as to become self-righteous. But this is in no sense a necessary outcome of our learning to appreciate spiritual treasures and to purposely take means of enlarging our possession of them and our joy in them. Once started along this road, there is infinite opportunity of growth and enlargement for every individual. The experiences of peace, joy, liberty, and love, to which we all may and shall attain, cannot be measured, for they are infinite. Before the individual has made any great degree of progress in getting rich along these lines, he begins to discover more and more that, except in a very secondary sense, neither the possession of material goods nor the right use of them is the source of desirable states of consciousness, but that we can gain a large experience of these mental treasures and a firm hold upon them only in proportion as we acquaint ourselves with God and derive them directly from Him, knowing that He is the only source of unmixed good, and that even the good which we seem to get from and through matter is from Him, though much adulterated or distorted by the material medium. We experience good in connection with materiality, not because of it, but in spite of it. Love, joy, and peace are not properties of matter, and they are not found in material pursuits. They are everlasting, changeless manifestations of God, which are ever at hand, and which may be gained and possessed without limit by any individual who becomes awake to their presence, and who is willing to work for them faithfully, intelligently, and in right ways. The worker along these lines also soon discovers that while consciously seeking these mental treasures and centering his attention primarily upon gaining them, such outward or material goods as he needs for harmonious living while he is still forced to dwell in part in material sense come his way without a large amount of conscious effort on his part. He finds the words of Christ to be literally true. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. It is true that in our present stage of experience, we cannot have large conscious possession of peace, joy, and love without experiencing an increase of health and strength of body, as well as of material goods. And it is true that if we strive most of all to make ourselves rich toward God, we shall soon find ourselves not lacking either in strength, health, or worldly possessions according to our needs. A balanced man is one who can center his thought at will, be it in the solitude of the mountain fastness, or facing peril in the jungle, in the hurly-burly of affairs, as well as in the quiet of his favorite den. This is the realization of God ever present, and it is the secret of all true achievement. A really poised man is a miracle, humanly speaking. It is he who has found the secret source of all power, solved his problem, and entered upon the life that is boundless and eternal. H. F. Porter.